Welcome to slide 2 of the July 1990 edition of Computer Talk, and staying with the BBC and its hardware, you may remember me talking about the Master Morley board on previous tapes, so here is our friend John Gilliver to tell you all about it.
Users of the BBC microcomputer system, either the Model B or the Master, will have come across various utilities, word processors, games, etc., which are supplied on ROM, read-only memory, chip that plugs inside the computer. The number of slots inside the computer for these is quite limited, only 3 on the Master, and a similar number on the Model B. Those on the Master are capable of being loaded with the larger size ROMs, which means you can put 2 utilities in one ROM and thus not fill up the slots so fast, but this requires access to programming machinery for the larger ROMs. The smaller ROMs may be used, but obviously then the space is occupied even more quickly. For both machines, other manufacturers have produced what are known as ROM boards, which are a board with many sockets in. For the Master there is only the one that I know of, called the AA ROM board from Morley Electronics. For the Model B there are various different sizes with various different numbers of ROM sockets, some of which also supply battery-backed RAM area for downloading such programs from disk. Some have the RAM area which isn't battery-backed. Fitting of these is usually fairly easy. On the Morley board it requires no cutting of wires or soldering. That's the Morley board for the Master. I believe the same applies to most of the boards on the Model B also. The Morley board on the Master allows insertion of 12 ROMs, of which up to 4 may be selected by software inside the computer at any one time. In other words, 4 of the 12 may be switched in simply by typing at the keyboard, or any 2 of them or all 4 of them may be switched to be RAM instead. Whichever is selected is retained even when the computer is switched off. So next time you switch it on, the same ROMs will be selected. The Morley ROM board also comes with a utility called FI copy, which has nothing to do with it. It was just a space in the control ROM that they thought they may as well fill with something useful, and they put in a utility for selectively copying files between ADFS and DFS disks. For users of the Model B, there is one other similar system made by Watford. I can't remember what it's called, but something like ZIF, Z-I-F, Zero Insertion Force. This is just basically a piece of extension cable, one end of which plugs into one of the ROM sockets inside the machine, and the other end is, as the name suggests, a zero insertion force socket, which appears to the left of the keyboard in the perforated hole on the Model B. They also supply with that kit a Perspex box containing a piece of foam in which to keep ROMs. With this, only one ROM may be used at a time, but they may be exchanged repeatedly without placing any wear on the pins of the sockets and without opening up the computer. This is quite useful for example, games, which it might be desirable if you don't want to let children inside the computer. A friend of mine uses this for exactly that reason. The ZIF socket places very little wear on the pins of the ICs, certainly a lot less than pushing them into and pulling them out of the sockets inside the machine. This has been John Gilliver, G6JPG.
And thanks, John, for that article on the Master board. Anyway, if any of you are interested in it, I have the address here. It had been put on a previous tape, but I'll give it to you again. And you can write to Ray Hope, Morley Electronic, M-O-R-L-E-Y, Morley House, Norham Road, N-O-R-H-A-M, North Shields, Tyne and Wear, N-E-29, November Echo 29, 7-T-Y, 7-Tango Yankee. Telephone number 091-257-6355. And now, here is one of our most regular contributors, Albert Yeo, to speak to you.
I want to answer inquiries which I've been getting lately as to what happened to the brailer that I designed a couple of years ago. Some of you may remember that at that time I did a piece on the tape in the magazine about this machine, this little braille keyboard, which I was had designed. When I set out to design it, I wanted to design a keyboard which would have braille input, a braille keyboard, which would accept input in braille, store it in its memory, and then it would be possible to output it, dump it into the computer or word processor for editing and eventual saving or printing or just display and speech. The criteria was to design a machine which would have the minimum of facilities which would be conducive with usefulness, so that it could then be manufactured and marketed at the lowest price. Well, this went ahead, and I bore the cost of the research and development and testing of the prototype, building and testing the prototypes, and eventually it was ready for production. But I didn't feel that I could myself afford the cost of setting up the production system. So Brian Payne, chairman of Electronic Aids for the Blind, agreed to put up the money to set up the production system and to handle the distribution of the machine. It has a 32K memory, a braille keyboard with 8 keys, well, 9 including the space bar, which is a standard space bar. The other 2 keys outside of the normal 6 braille dots are dot 7, which is a control key, and dot 8, which is the shift key. When you enter characters, they're by default, they're small characters, lowercase. If you add dot 8 when you enter the character, as you enter the character, it will come out in uppercase. Brian tells me that he is going to arrange to put a switch on the machine so that it can be switched to default to upper or lowercase letters. That's a sophistication I didn't think necessary in the first place, because I didn't design it in an environment like we've got today with Jotter and Braille and Speak and so on, with all their sophistications. And I was thinking in terms of use with the BBC computer, where, or with IBM, where the case of characters mostly doesn't matter, so that it was easy enough to have it defaulting to lowercase, and you have to add the shift key if you want it to be uppercase. All to keep it simple and cheap. You input your data in Braille, it gets translated into ASCII and stored in normal ASCII form inside the memory, in such a way that if you output it, it will come out as if you'd typed it in from the normal computer keyboard. The memory, as I've said, is 32K, and if you wish, you can type in a 32,000 byte file, but it's not often you'll want one that long. So you need a method of separating the files, and this is done very simply. There's no problems with it. You simply type your document, whether it's a letter, a report, or whatever it is, and when you've finished, you add a final character consisting of dots 7 and 8 together. Now, that character goes into the memory, but is not sent to the output. So you haven't got any problems of getting rid of it after you've dumped the file into the computer or word processor. When you press one of the two push buttons, that's the zero button, the brailler goes back to the beginning of its memory. Then if you press the dump button, it will buzz through its memory till it meets this character and then stop. If you press the dump button again, it will carry on and load the next file till it again sees this dot 7 and 8, then it'll stop. So that's how you separate files. Very simple, no problems occur with it. Except that, of course, if you wanted the third file, you would have to quickly buzz through the first two to reach the third file, which in practice is no problem. You can do it without the brailler connected to the computer if you wish, then plug in and press the dump button and your third file would be loaded. There's no feedback as such in the sense that we think of it today. There's no speech output. It doesn't have any speech output of its own or anything like that. Data is not entered on the pressing of the key. You press the keys and nothing is entered until you release the keys. Then the data is entered, the character is entered. Now this has one advantage, that if you accidentally press a wrong dot and you've still got the keys pressed down, you simply release that unwanted dot and then release the other keys and you won't get the one you didn't want. There is a delete character, which is dot 6 and 7 together, and that will delete the last character, and you can delete back through a word if you wish, or through a sentence, or through a whole file if you're crazy enough. But now, as you release the keys, you'll hear a faint click in the little loudspeaker. It's not loud enough to disturb anybody, but if you're actually listening for it, you could hear it, a little crack, a little electronic click. The keys are quite quiet in operation and are the same size as those on a BBC computer, so that you'd be familiar with the handling of them. When you want to dump a file, you press the dump button and the brailler buzzes through its memory to the end of that file, and you will then hear a sound. And if I can find the machine, yes, here it is. This is the sound that you will hear when you're dumping. That file had about 8,000 bytes, I think, if I remember rightly. You heard it dumping, or at least it would have been dumping if it had been connected to the computer. As it is, it just buzzed idly through its memory, ready for the next file. If you'd connected that to the computer, it would dump like this. Let's see if we can listen to that now, dumping into the word processor. Just check whether we're we're in the word processor.
Exit.
Right, now this is the sound you'll hear as it dumps into the word processor, which for a lot of you will be word wise but for me it's view with the braille screen reader. So here we go. Well, that's the sound that it makes as it dumps. Now, you may have noticed that the buzz that time was not quite as smooth. It seemed to be broken up a little into patches. And the reason for that is that the software which you get with the machine sets up port B and gives other instructions to the computer, so that the computer accepts as much data from the dump as it can handle at a time, stops the dump automatically, deals with the data, and as soon as it's ready it starts the dump from where it left off. And so you do get this sort of broken up sound, as though the file's being stopped and started, because in fact that's what is happening. That file was, as I said, about 8k, and as you heard, it loaded reasonably fast because it's done in parallel. Right, then two things remain. One, to listen back to that file just to prove that it has loaded into view, and the other, to give you EAB's address. So first of all, listen to that file being read back from view, having been loaded, dumped in from the brailer.
It was greater than SC. This is a short piece to demonstrate the way in which the brailer works. The device can be plugged straight into the power B socket of the BBC computer and will send data either from its 32K memory or directly from the brailer's keyboard. The 32K size of the memory is the only limit to the length of a file. There is a special character which you can enter as the last character in the file, and which will separate files from one another. Data is sent to the computer in the form of 8-bit SA bytes, and is transferred in parallel, so transfer is very fast, an advantage when sending long files. The philosophy behind the design of this brailler was that I set out to produce a keyboard which would provide the minimum of facilities consistent with usefulness, and which could be marketed at a price which folks could afford. The device has no sophistication such as speech output, since it is specifically designed to be used with a computer. Those using the brailler with a BBC matching will have the advantage of a grade 2 translator which is supplied with the device at no extra charge. You can type in your data in grade 2 braille, and it will be automatically translated into normal print for printing or screen display. You can choose to connect the keyboard directly to a printer, if you wish, but then, of course, you would have no editing facilities. The price for all the software, connecting, ribbon, the great translator, and, of course, the brailler itself, is £230.
Well, that's the little part of that file. I didn't want you to have to listen through it all. I'll just add that the default machine is set up for US United States computer 8. Braille, that is ordinary 6. Braille, but control key and a shift key, and the characters are not the same as ordinary Braille. For example, a full stop in computer Braille is dots 4 and 6, not dots 2, 5 and 6 as it is in ordinary Braille, and similarly for other signs, though the characters, the letters and are the same. Numbers are entered without a numeral sign in lower case, so dots 2 and 3 would give you a number 2, dots 2 and 5 would give you a number 3, and so on without a numeral sign. That would come out in the translation as a numbers 2 and 3. However, if you were using the grade 2 translator, then as you typed in grade 2, you would use the same punctuation marks as you normally do. That is, for a full stop you'd enter dots 2, 5 and 6. For a comma you'd enter dot 2 and so on, just as you normally would, because the translator will translate that. But if you're writing programs, you'd have to remember that it's set up for US computer Braille. On the other hand, the translation between Braille and ASCII is done in an EEPROM, which plugs into a socket on the board inside the brailer, Toucan Communications, the manufacturers, have agreed that you can order the machine for any braille format. You could have it ordered for normal braille, and the appropriate EEPROM would be plugged in before it was sent to you. Alternatively, you could buy two or three EEPROMs and interchange them to suit yourself. So it's flexible in that respect. If you stipulated you didn't want to know about computer braille, you just wanted to enter ordinary braille, you would get the machine at the same price with the appropriate EEPROM, and you could forget about computer braille. Remember that it's designed for use with a computer, for not only for word processing but for writing programs, so you might want the US computer braille for that purpose. That file loaded okay. I didn't want to make you listen through the whole 8K or round about that, but you will have heard that it worked out all right without a lot of trouble. You can as well use it for direct entry, that is, when it's plugged in to the computer and the Star Braille, the program that sets up the port, has been loaded, you can then use it as a straightforward alternative to the QWERTY keyboard. So anything you type in Braille on the Braille keyboard will automatically go to the computer as if you'd typed it on the QWERTY keyboard, in other words, in normal ASCII. And if your speech is on, it'll speak as you type, of course. And then at the same time, you'd have to remember to move to a vacant part of the memory, otherwise you'd be overwriting a file that's already in memory, because everything you type on the Braille keyboard goes into the memory. But if you were programming, you see, you could simply type in a program, listening as it went in, run it, edit it, or whatever, and then dump it into the computer as a normal program file in the usual way, and when you want it, you just load and run or chain it as you would any other program, and the computer doesn't know anything about the Braille aspect of it. It's received the data in normal form and it will handle it in normal form. So there we are. Now, last thing is to give you the address of Jane Payne, the Secretary of Electronic Aids for the Blind. And it is Jane Payne, 28, Crofton, that's C-R-O-F for from, T-O-N, Crofton Avenue, Orpington, Kent, B for but, R for rather, 6, 8, D do, U-O-S. So that's BR68DU. And the telephone number, 0689 55651. If you want to contact me with any questions, you're welcome to do so. My address is number 9 Glendower Road, that's GLENDOWER, Glendower Road, Aldridge, that's ALDRIDGE, Walsall, that's WALS for so, ALL, and the postcode is WS for so, 9, 8, H have E every. And my phone number is 0922 57995. I'll leave you with that and say cheerio.
And it's cheerio to Albert Yeo as well. And thanks for the interesting article there on the Braille. Well, haven't really got all that many articles from people this time round for Computer Talk. Maybe because it is summer and people like to go out at night and so forth. So with that, I now have to fall back to the Edinburgh BCAB exhibition of last June. There was one in Leeds this year in June, but we felt it was a little bit far to go, so we didn't go. However, I'm sure some of this information will still be fresh for some people. So, let us now go up to Edinburgh and the Roxburgh Hotel, where the BCAB exhibition was being held.
Family, right, let's try that then.
Yes.
Test
1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Yes. Test 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3.
Okay. Now, I'll go back into where I was. I was on...
App track.
Applications, yes. Tracking. Okay. Now, I'm looking at the status line on WP. You know Word Perfect?
Yes. Well, I know Word Processing, not this one.
Well, the Word Perfect is a particular application. On the status line at the bottom, it will say doc, whatever it is, doc one,
yes.
Line, whatever it is, page, whatever it is,
yes.
And position, whatever it is. In fact, what it says on the screen, which is what I was trying to say to you earlier, it actually says doc one, mm-hmm. PG one, LN one, pos 10. Now, you can, if there's something you don't like or want changing in Arctic, you can go in and say, no, don't say it that way, say it another. For example, this thing will say processor, because it's American. I don't like that, so I've changed that. So every time it says processor now, it'll say processor.
Yes.
And reverse, it'll say reverse instead of reverse. And I've gone in and changed that, so it now says reverse. Now, what I've done, I've gone into the dictionary and said, PG means page, say page. LN means line, say line. POS means position. So now when I press that, it says
dot one, page one, line one, position ten.
Okay,
yeah,
that's much clearer than
dot one, line one.
Okay, you can get
10.
Used to PGL, and it doesn't really matter. That's me being fussy.
Yes,
this computer itself is the Toshiba 1000, the tiny laptop one, like 6.5 pounds weight.
Oh, very useful. Also, be IBM compatible, will it?
Oh, yes, it is IBM compatible, yeah. But it is only a one disc machine, don't forget. It's, you know,
yeah, 3.5
a 3.5 inch disc, yeah. It's this particular one fitted with 524K of memory, which means that you can actually add another 768K of memory to it,
yeah,
which is not used. Dolphin do one, but they have already added that memory to it. How much of it is used, I don't know. But we have actually got, I'm running Word Perfect with the speech on and everything else, which takes about 373K of memory. So I've got about left, I've got 20 or 30K for a document. But that's without adding the 768K, which I
still
can use
enough
as a
for a document. It's quite good. Yeah.
But even so, if you wanted to add, and you said to me, well, no, I do files that are nearly 500K long, then you'd add memory.
Yeah.
So I just use that poem.
Well, tonight, the fortress must end all through the house. Not a creature left stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the pimply with hair, in the hope that Saint Nicholas would be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that, I don't know how understandable.
What's a speech synthesizer again, did you say?
Arctic. ARTIC.
Right.
Yes.
So does that have a parallel and serial ports?
Yes, we do. John?
The Arctic won't go with the
It will
BBC.
Not go with the BBC, no. It's PC compatibles. Yeah. And it will do the whole range of Toshiba portables up to the 5200 if you want, which is, you know, the very expensive one. But it will not go on BBC because you need actually, BBC either needs the internal speech chip or a system like PAL, which, you know, which takes it out to a port.
So therefore it would clash really with some programs on the BBC.
It won't go with the BB at all, yes. Because it needs an actual PC slot.
Yes.
It in fact is a board.
Yes.
It does not tie a communications port up. That's
yes.
The advantage of it. The disadvantage is it won't go with the BBC.
Yes.
And it actually it runs off the data bus of the PC computer.
Yes. Well, BBC has a data bus.
Yes, it does, but it isn't configured
isn't
as
the
a...
Right
that's right. It does
probably.
Have, yes, that's right.
So what's special about the Arctic as opposed to, say, the Apollo?
Well, some of that's bound to be subjective, but I think the speech is much clearer on the Arctic than anything I've heard personally.
So is it a newer synthesizer out?
Yes, probably. It's questionable whether it's newer than the Apollo. It's just a different technology. But the things I like about it, the things that are different about the Arctic, let's put it that way, you've got an exceptions dictionary so that any word you don't like the pronunciation of, you go in and change. I mean, if you want it, I mean, I in fact last week did this with somebody. Every time I got it to look at the word hello, and it said type original spelling, and I typed H-E-L-L-O, and then it said type substitute spelling, so I typed bonjour. So every time it saw the word hello, it said bonjour.
Which is, I'll teach my computer
French.
Yeah,
exactly, yes. It's very difficult to do, because in fact, to get it actually to say things like bonjour, you've got to do it phonetically, and B-O-N space G-E-R was the only way I could say it properly. You wouldn't need it for that purpose unless you were dealing with a child and trying to teach a child something. But nevertheless, if you don't like the way it says a word, you can change any word you like. I find about half a dozen I don't like. It says synchronous instead of synchronous.
What? Okay, so you've got one disk drive on it. This is for main portability.
Yeah, this it is. It is indeed. It's a Toshiba 1000, which is the same thing that Dolphin. That's right. You put it in the briefcase along with the Opticon, which is what I generally do. I've got an Opticon, this machine I carry around with me.
Yeah.
I've got various other, you know, discs and whatnot I carry around with me, obviously. And it's a lovely portable machine.
Yes,
but it has only got one disk drive.
Now for a smaller computer. It's a mini computer.
It is a computer, yes.
So
that, you're used to the idea of disk drives.
Yes.
That, in fact, is the equivalent to the disk. It's called it's a RAM pack, that particular one. You get data packs and RAM packs, and you just put that in the side of the machine.
Just
and
rather this, like a large chip with no
It's exactly what it is. It's a chip.
And what memory will that hold, though, then?
304K at the most.
Fair bit, that.
Oh, it's not bad, not bad at all.
Really, for...
Yeah, for a pocket computer, yes, it is.
You can shove all your data onto that and then back on the disk anytime you want.
You can, actually, yes. You can back it up on a disk.
Yeah.
It's got a few keys. It looks rather like a number pad. What are all the keys on?
Well, you've got all the 36 keys altogether. You've got a shift key, because some of them need to be altered from numbers to letters. So you've got all the letters, obviously, and you've got all the numbers, all the digits in a normal way. And you've got all the things you need, you know, brackets, arithmetic stuff. This is basically a database without the programming language. It has got a programming language. Without that, it's got a database built in, it's got a diary facility built in, and it's got a calculator built in. Now, all those things are already in the machine, but in fact, it's also got a programming language, so you can build into it whatever you want. Which is what I built this notepad system into. And
it's a very small keyboard,
It is a small keyboard, but funnily enough, I've had two people in the 70s who are, certainly one of them is, well, I'd say both of them are almost totally blind, not absolutely, but sort of, they certainly couldn't use their vision with the keys. And they've coped with this keyboard easily, quite frankly. It will repeat every key as you press it, so that you know that you've got the right key.
So is that giving you a braille key or a...
It just gives you out to the speech synthesizer.
Yes.
Each time you press the key, it'll say B, A, whatever it is you're putting down. It's just an A, B, C, D, E, F on the top row, or the second row down to be precise, and then you go through the alphabet from there. You've got G to L, etc, etc.
Yeah, well, you can soon memorise
the layout. You do memorise it. People say to me, well, it's difficult. It's not difficult, it's just different, that's the point.
So you could be going to work and you could ride on a bus or on transport, whatever you wish.
Absolutely.
And then load it into the machine afterwards.
That's right. Well, the Street Electronics, they've got a speech synthesizer, rather like the same idea as the Mimic or the Apollo, which is, I should think, not much bigger than a packet of 20 cigarettes. And that is the same thing as that. Now, I'm going to get that speech synthesizer. It's going to cost somewhere in the region of £85.
Yes.
And I shall sell that with this device, because it's much, much better than the Mimic or the Apollo would ever know how to make, in terms of fitting with that device.
Yes. The Apollo is £400.
And you were saying to me, what is good about the Arctic? The things I like about that, it's got the usual facilities that most good quality speech synthesizers have, like you can look at each character, each yes. line, each word, windows, all that kind of thing,
yes.
As you can with all of them. The things I like about it particularly are you've got an exceptions dictionary, you've got a facility for numbering lines if you want to, you've got a facility for telling you when the line is indented, so it will say yes. indent 10 and then read the line to you. You don't have to have those on,
no,
you can have them if
have
you
it.
Want.
Yes.
You've got a key watchdog facility so that if something else calls the keyboard, it will say vector for keyboard now changed. So you know that that's happened. And if you need to be alerted to that, because you know on some computers you get one of the keys lights up because the
yes.
keyboard's being called, it will actually say keyboard vector request. And then you know that that's lit up. So you now know that you're supposed to do something.
Yeah.
It's got that facility. It's got a lot of very good facilities, you know, and it's a very, to my mind, it's a very clear speech. I like the
yes.
Arctic speech altogether.
No, IBM is the world standard,
it's not
going to go away.
It's an industry standard, I'm afraid that's true. I took the same line as you. The idea of going to an IBM, I thought, oh no, do I have to, you know, but having got to it, I actually like it, I must admit. I find it less complicated than the BBC, but I think that's probably because I'm used to it, in fairness.
The only thing is, it is a bit slow.
Oh yes, it is. I agree with it.
I agree with it. I type yes. fast.
The Tosh keyboard is different. It's small, it's nice.
Yes.
Have you had a look at the Tosh keyboard?
No, I haven't.
Hang on just a sorry because I can stop it, but you'll find it's a slightly different keyboard. Get used to the feel of it first.
Yes, I'm looking at it. It's got its little screen there.
That's the little screen in front of
yes.
me. That's the liquid crystal
yes.
display, which is no good to me and thee.
Yes.
But, you know, it must have its uses.
Yeah, it's quite a small machine.
It is a small machine. It's a very small machine.
12 inches wide.
Yes, something like that.
Long.
That's
and,
right.
Just a little bit thick.
That's the complete thickness of it there.
Ah, yes.
Because that, don't forget, that comes down over the keyboard like that.
See.
So it's just like a very small typewriter.
And then you can carry it about with
you. You can indeed. It weighs six and a half pounds.
Oh, I see.
But
right.
You can now type something on the screen. I mean, you may make a mess of it in so much that you're not used to that keyboard.
And
if you go for a quote, you'll find it not where you expect it to be.
Ah,
do you use Shift 2 for quotes?
Yes.
Well, this doesn't. It uses Shift and the apostrophe, which is to the right of your little finger.
Semicolon.
Yes. But you won't be using that. Yeah, that's an American keyboard.
Yes.
That. Type away then.
Yes.
You see, the space annoys me. I've just had that guy that was just talking to you that you know.
Yes.
He wanted it to say space between each word. It even told you where the cursor is. It's at column 41. Go into review.
Space silent.
Okay, off you go.
Magic.
Key space silent. It won't say anything to you now except the word.
Oh, yeah.
There's a speaker built into the computer.
But what would that cost us?
$1,395 as a machine. Yeah.
So who is it you work for and where are you
I don't actually work for, I'm working with VisionAid Systems at the moment. I wonder if I that back yet, do we know?
You'd go for the full window if you like and you'd just hit.
Hello everybody, here we are at the Roxburgh Hotel having a look at the Pet Delicious. The have a slippy touch and so the meal is rather different from the ordinary night piece. Glad Wendy, that was a
line 5, sorry, yes. You can get it to look at a word, and if it doesn't recognise it as a word, it will actually spell it for you.
Yeah, oh, I see.
In packet radio, because
yes,
it would give call signs out.
It does.
As opposed to
it
spelling
does.
Them. So
it
acronyms
does. Yeah.
Work quite nicely.
Yes, it will say BC3416 or whatever
yeah.
it is, or it might say BC137 or BC137, depending what you've got it set on. Because
yes.
what this has got is the other thing that's very nice, and again, when it sees a number, it'll pronounce it if you want it to, as an actual number, 331,724.
So it won't give it as figures or
it
digits.
Won't give it, not unless you want it to. Yeah, if you want it to, you make it, you go into that and you tell it, no, the telephone numbers, I don't want it said like that. It will now say 289553.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can do either with this, which is rather nice.
This is just running on the Toshiba. The Toshiba with the Arctic Speech is 1395, but you want, if anybody wants, has got a PC and they wanted just the board for a PC, then that costs 434, which isn't too bad at all. But that's all, that includes the software for driving it as well, I suppose.
Now, the Arctic Dictionary, it's in the synthesizer itself?
It's actually in the software in the machine, yes.
In the machine?
It's part of what you get when you pay your £434, yeah. It's all part of the package.
I see.
Yes.
Does it have a battery in then, a memory battery, so when you turn it off...
Oh, no, but it stores it on disk. If I wanted now to save all those things I've done, I would simply put it on the disk in a file called Visions.
Yes, I see.
And when it looks at the disk, when it opens up again next time, it would automatically load that in. It wouldn't wait for me to redo it again. It automatically does it. So next time it comes on, it would automatically store us.
Good demonstration, thanks. I enjoyed looking at it.
Good.
Well, there you are. That was all about the Arctic Speech Synthesizer and Toshibas and so forth. Next, we have a little demonstration. I'm sure some of you will have heard it before on the radio and so forth. But this is the newer type of Kurzweil reading machine, and it's showing you all its voices.
Perfect call. The reading voice of Huge Harry.
Huge Harry?
Huge Harry, I think that's...
The reading voice of Braille Frank.
Braille Frank?
The reading voice is Dr. Dennis.
Dr. Dennis?
The reading voice is Beautiful Betty.
Beautiful Betty?
The reading voice is Up to the Ursula.
Up to the Ursula?
Yeah.
The reading voice is Whispering Wendy.
Whispering Wendy?
The reading voice is Rough Rita.
Rough Rita?
Mm-hmm. The reading voice is Kit the Kid.
Kit the Kid?
The reading voice is Perfect Paul.
This is the Kurzweil personal...
Kurzweil.
Yeah, this is
right.
The Kurzweil personal reader.
Yeah. That's the main...
Screen.
Mm-hmm. That's the main screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, well, I see. Yeah. So all packed away neatly.
It's very neat. It's incredibly neat. Honestly,
9 by 8 by 4 high.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you put your paper and your other bits of equipment to read, if you want to read, you were on about these magnetic strips. Do you put them along the top.
Yeah,
It's got a tracking aid.
So you can keep your camera fairly straight. What do they cost? Because it's mainly big organisations that buy these, isn't it?
The manpower services will buy people the machines on permanent loan. So they will have a good course for reading of text.
Yes.
Okay. Basically in the work environment. Now we have three models, model 10, 20 and 30. The model 10 is the handheld scanner and the electronics unit. That's 7,900.
Right.
We also have a model 20, which is the automatic scanner and the electronics unit.
Yes.
That's £10,000.
So why does that cost more? Because it's got more facilities on?
It's a bigger scanner.
Yeah.
It's a bigger object, basically.
Right.
It can read a whole page at once. There's more actual technology's gone into that.
Yes.
There's a lot more of an electronic unit as well. I mean, the handheld scanner, it's about the size of two boxes of Swan matches. Okay.
Yes.
The automatic scanner, what can I say? About the size of a first video machine, maybe. Now, the handheld scanner, that can go into the electronics unit. That's quite portable. Weighs just under 20 pounds. Although that's quite heavy for some people. You know, it can be portable, basically.
Yes.
So it's just
yes.
like a heavy briefcase.
Yes, it is. Oh, that's quite useful.
Then with the automatic scanner, although I'm sighted, I mean, I could carry that underneath my arm and hold the electronic unit and I can go away, no problems.
Smaller portable ones, so they'll read most text.
Most typeset, typewritten material. To say that it actually read, it would have to have a go, really. You know, have a go at reading the text.
I see.
About saying it would read yours, whatever. Yeah. You'd have to have a few examples of the text that you'd like to be able to read.
Yes. But for example, people doing drafts and documents at work and computer printouts, it's probable that it would read those.
Well, with the dot matrix, the 9 pin, it can't read that dot matrix.
Oh,
it can read the 24 pin. It can't read the colour red.
Yeah.
Well, that's odd.
Because of that, the scanner is red.
Oh.
It gives that a red beam.
Infrared. Oh dear.
So,
oh,
something you've got to remember, if you had a machine, with reading your bills, pay them straight away, because they don't read your red bills. So you can't tell the judge that you didn't read your bills.
The machine wouldn't read, I'm sorry, Your Honour.
Yes, right.
We had a word with BT. They said, well, that's tough luck, really, you should pay them straight away.
I suppose if you keep your bill straight away and you get another one, it won't read it. You know, it's a reminder of someone or other, and you better pay the lot.
Yeah. Well, the company name is Sight and Sound Technology Limited.
Yeah.
Quantel House, Quantel, the American way to spell it.
Yes.
Quantel House, Anglia Way, Moulton Park, Northampton.
Yes.
And the postcode is NN31WD.
Yeah.
The code for Northampton is 0604.
Mm-hmm.
790-969.
Well, I hope some of you enjoyed those two articles. First of all, about the Arctic speech synthesizer and then the Kurzweil reading machines. However, we are coming to the end of Computer Talk for July 1990, and we look forward to getting lots of articles from you for the October Computer Talk. And if you would like to contact us, name is Julia and Frank Cosgrove at number 8 Wandsworth Road, Heaton, Newcastle upon Tyne, NE6, that is November Echo 6 5 AD, Anno Domini. The phone number being 091-2656-345. And if any radio amateurs wish to contact us on Packet, my call sign is T4UOW Golf 4 Uniform Oscar Whiskey, and I can be found on TB7 BMX Bravo Mike X-ray. So now, from your editors Julia and Frank, it's goodbye to you all until next time. Bye for now.